You're listening to News Tribune on Tap, The Fine Print, where we bring you the stories behind the stories. I'm your host, Mia Sanson, here with the latest headlines, newsroom reporter interviews, and a closer look at the stories shaping our community. In today's episode, we are covering stories from Sunday, November 16th through Tuesday, November 18th. Starting off, we have Steffi Smith, our city government reporter, talking about the update on the East Elm Street apartments.
Yeah, so the city council on Monday night approved a development plan for 48 apartments at 1740 East Elm Street. The development company, CJCA Development Inc., said that the apartments will be specifically for low-income clients who have mental illnesses. There will be 12 buildings. They will each have 4 apartments, and each of the apartments will be a 1-bedroom. Some residents from a street nearby, Del Cerro Drive, and some of the surrounding streets showed up to the city council to voice their opposition to this development plan because there were a couple different problems that they have. There was stormwater. They were nervous that the runoff from the stormwater would flood their street. They had problems with the fact that there weren't many sidewalks in the area. They didn't want the wildlife to be disturbed because this is currently a very wooded area and they'll be removing some of the trees to build these apartments. And then also something that a lot of people touched on was they were nervous about a potential increase in crime. They believe that maybe some people who struggle with mental health problems might be more inclined to commit crimes in the area. The vote was 7-2 for the city council. One of the persons who voted no on the development plan, Councilman Shane Campeter, he had some problems with the fact that there wasn't very much sidewalk infrastructure in the area. The development company said that they chose this location partially because it's within walking distance to some fast food places and grocery stores and gas stations. And Andrea Chung with the development company said that about 20% of her clients don't have a vehicle and can't drive, so she wanted them to have somewhere that they can walk to.
So what is the next move in this development going forward?
So this was a preliminary planned unit development plan that went before the city council. They will still have to come back for a final development plan, and they did not give any estimates for when construction will begin.
Okay, thank you, Steffi. We are here with Liz Garcia, our state government reporter. How are you doing, Liz?
I'm doing great, Mia. Thanks for having me.
Of course. She's going to be talking about the governor's mansion Christmas tree.
Yeah, it's really exciting stuff because on Monday, they started assembling the metal frame for an artificial tree, actually. Typically, we've had some natural trees that were scouted from across the state and brought into the governor's mansion lawn. So Monday morning, mansion staff were kind of putting together this steel metal frame to build the foundation for the artificial tree, and they kind of had some like garland laying on the ground, and it looked like it might be like wrapped around the tree, and it was decorated with like ornaments and such. It was just kind of a departure from tradition. Normally the Missouri Department of Conservation would also be involved with this sort of planning to scout for a real tree in Missouri, and last year there was a married couple from Boone County. It was actually their second time getting chosen, and they had a tree from their property get put up in the governor's mansion lawn, and so they decorated that. Usually there's also a Christmas tree lighting that the public is involved to or kind of invited to come to that, and you can take a tour of the mansion and see all the elaborate Christmas decorations that they have. I walked by there this morning on Tuesday and saw that they were kind of finishing assembling the metal frame, and they had wrapped some of that artificial garland around, and there's a tree topper too, so that's up now. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting to see something different this year.
So I'm sure many people are wondering, why are they transitioning from a real tree to an artificial tree?
You know, we're not really sure right now. The governor's office has not put out any official details, and I haven't been able to get any further information on that. So as soon as they kind of release some more details and info on that, I'll certainly be giving a new story up on that.
Great. Thank you so much. ¶¶ are talking with Anna Campbell, our education reporter, and she's going to be talking about her story on the free eyeglasses for elementary school students. Hello, Anna.
Hi, Mia. A new partnership in the Jefferson City School District is helping students see better. The district launched a pilot program this week with KidSight, a nonprofit that helps provide eye care for children. And the program is funded by grants from the United Way and the AP Green Foundation. And it provides full eye exams to students and up to 2 free pairs of eyeglasses to children who need them. Around 20 students at Mora Heights Elementary School saw Dr. Joseph Rich of Family Focused Eye Care on Friday, and Rich determined their prescription, and then the students got to pick out a pair of glasses in whatever color they wanted. So most students got 2 pairs, one for home and one to stay at school. The district has offered a basic screening to catch the warning signs for years, but this is the first year it's offering the full follow-up exams for children that may need glasses, and school and district staff told me they think it'll make a big difference. Chad Suter, the district's director of health services, explained that there may have been students who fell through the cracks before and didn't get an eye exam after a basic school screening. So he's hoping that bringing this exam to the school for free breaks down those barriers that may have held families back, like transportation and insurance. So staff also described seeing the instant difference it made for students who said they could read the letters on the wall or see the individual leaves on the trees. And the program is being piloted at Mora Heights, but they're hoping to expand it to all 11 of the district's elementary schools.
So how many kids exactly were able to get the screening and the eyeglasses?
I was told it was around 24. So they screened all the kids in the school, and then the ones that kind of showed the flags, they brought in for the full exam.
As someone who wears eyeglasses, I have to agree with the administrators and the teachers on how this is a great program and how it will impact the learning of the students. What difference does this make for learning?
Yeah, I don't wear glasses, but I do wear contacts, and so I agree. When I was a student, it became apparent that I needed glasses when I stopped being able to follow along, and I think some of these students are experiencing that too. If you can't see the board, it's really hard to stay focused and stay engaged and stay learning, so they're hoping that this makes it easier for kids to stay engaged in class and keep learning.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we are talking with Matthew McFarland, county government reporter, about the African Children's Choir that performed in JC on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere. You know, these kids from Kenya and Uganda, they come in and they tour the U.S. and they use those funds to pay for education back home for, I believe it was over 40,000 children since it started in 1984. And it was just a lot of fun. These kids came up and, you know, they're singing classic hymns, but kind of adding in, you know, African percussion. They had a whole drum section. And of course, they're doing some, you know, traditional African hymns as well. And it was just packed house, completely full. And, you know, by the end of it, everyone was up dancing and clapping with them. It was just a really fun atmosphere to be a part of.
So how did this African choir end up in Jefferson City?
Yeah, so it was at First Church of God, and they reached out in 2011, and they reached out to get on this list, this like waiting list, you know, kind of this cycle that they go through. Because they tour every year, they stop 100-ish places in the U.S. every year, but they don't hit the same cities every time. And so it started in 2011 when they came to Jeff City for the first time, and now I believe that was the fourth time this last Sunday that they were in Jefferson City.
So what is the African Children Choir?
Yeah, so it started in 1984 after the conclusion of the Ugandan Civil War. It was obviously very vicious, and there were a lot of displaced children. You know, obviously the economic impacts they're still feeling today. A reverend was on a mission there, and he felt that if he could get these children in front of Western audiences and get them to meet these children, that there would be, you know, more of that empathetic connection, be able to raise awareness and support, you know, through Western funds, obviously, funneling them back home. And so it started in 1984, and they still tour every year to this day. And now they educate and pull kids from this choir from Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, and South Africa.
This concludes today's episode. You've been listening to News Tribune on Tap, The Fine Print, a production from the News Tribune. I'm your host, Mia Sanson. For more stories and in-depth reporting, visit newstribune.com, our social media channels, or pick up the latest edition. Thank you for joining us, and until next time.